Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
And I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be talking about co-op games. We'll take a closer look at what we like and dislike about co-op games. We'll talk alpha players to hidden traitors. But first, let's go off topic for some news, announcements, and feedback.
All right. Same old news. Not really true.
New stuff.
GameHoldCon is 3 weeks away. That leads into my second bit of news, though. I am being sent to Brazil next weekend.
Whoa.
I don't know if I'm leaving Saturday or Sunday. One of those 2 days. I'm leaving Brazil. And I'm going to use the plane ride up to and from to prepare for my game.
Alright.
Because I get back on Halloween Day, which is Monday the 31st.
Yeah.
And I leave for GameHoldCon on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you better be ready.
Yeah,
I'm putting it all together. Speaking of other things I'm doing, and you guys really should get some announcements in these notes.
I should,
like one person writes all of the show notes.
I don't know who that would be.
Well, I'll just throw it in there. I went to Minneapolis St. Paul, and we went to a bunch of really spooky things. Soap Factory, it's like this weird, demented, almost like, you know, a bunch of actors. Oh, God, it was like, in the UK, we just don't have haunted houses like you guys do. And this was extremely, extremely scary. I loved it.
You went to an American haunted house?
Yes.
With soap?
No.
It was an old factory?
Yeah. It's a space that they have the haunted basement in.
Got it.
But it's an old soap factory.
And people jumping out at you and scaring you.
Yeah. But
I was one of those people one time.
Oh, nice.
That was my job for just a couple days there. But yeah, I had to wear all the gross makeup.
That's so cool. How did you find it as an experience? Any standout moments?
It's really fun to scare like adult men. Just right. That's really fun. And also, you can tell the people who are experienced haunted housegoers because they'll spot the people, because I didn't have like shoes that matched my costume. I was wearing UGG boots. So they'd be like, that one's going to wake up and pop out at us because it has UGG boots on.
And then you don't. And then you Ooh. Jump up behind them. But you're not allowed to touch them, though, right?
No.
Oh, and the but one I went like, in, they were.
Oh, yeah? Did you have to like sign a waiver?
They like took my top off and like stole it and ran away and stuff. It was crazy. Wrote on my back and
marker.
Are
you sure you didn't just get mugged?
Yeah.
No.
It sounds like maybe it was just an abandoned warehouse where
I had a good time.
Yeah.
So.
I'm sure they did too. yeah, I haven't gotten to 100. I'm going to miss Halloween because I'll be in Brazil.
I know.
No.
The people I'm going to visit, they're like, can you bring Halloween decorations? Because we want to do like a Brazilian Halloween.
Right.
But we don't have a lot of good decorations. So I'm going to, like, half of my carry-on is going to be Halloween decorations.
Ooh.
Like, all right, I'll bring scary skeletons and pumpkins and witches.
Yeah, well, you guys know how to do it. This is like the home of Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. It's my favorite holiday of the year as of, in the last 5 or 6 years.
I agree.
It's just gotten really...
Since me and Spencer started having a party.
Just
noticing that trend.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Just saying. Yeah.
It really does help to have, like, a Halloween party to go to.
Uh-huh.
And yes. It makes it, like, as an adult, you don't really trick-or-treat. It's like, I'll just go across the street to CVS and buy all the candy.
Yeah.
If you have a Halloween party to go to, then
it's fun. Costume parties are so much fun.
Yeah.
So, looking forward to that. Speaking of parties.
Right.
I was contacted a couple days ago. So I teach how to play Dungeons & Dragons and how to DM Dungeons & Dragons at Cat & Mouse Game Store. I think I mentioned that before. And apparently, one of the mom-son combos that came to my how to play Dungeons & Dragons, she's had her 9-year-old son is having a 10-year-old birthday party in the next November. So she got a hold of me and asked if I could come and do the birthday party there.
I was really like impressed when I saw this. I was like, I didn't even know that was a thing. 10-year-olds playing D&D? Like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I love playing with kids because they have the biggest imaginations and
really, I bet.
Yeah. It's almost impossible for like 9 and 10 year olds to not have fun playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you just let them do whatever they want.
Right.
And it's the greatest experience ever.
So you gotta be a really flexible DM though, yeah. Which I think you are.
Yeah.
But definitely. It might be crazy making for other DMs.
You have to be okay with kids and who mm-hmm. they are and what they like to do.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I have never done like a birthday party before right. or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
When I DM, there's usually some kids at the table and I right. enjoy that, but I've never DM'd for just a table of kids.
Ah.
But I'm really looking forward to it.
I bet it's going to be fun.
Yeah. So I think it'll be a blast.
If you need a helper adult player, let me know.
I may actually tap you for that.
Yeah. That's right up my alley.
How many cases are going to be? And she's like, between 8 and 10.
Right.
Now, a group of D&D should be played with, what, maybe 5 to 6 players.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, 3 is fine. Once you get over 6, there's not a lot for everyone's attention.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And now you're talking 6 10-year-olds. That's going to be tricky.
Yeah, so, short attention spans, yeah. Right?
Well, one of the things I'm going to do right from the get-go is take the birthday boy and be like, all right, you are my assistant DM for the game.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's like, puts him in kind of the spotlight. And lets mm-hmm. him make,
that's
know,
a good idea.
And stuff. So I'm certainly going to help that along. But again, keeping all of these kids occupied she wants to go from like 4:30 to 7, which is, you know, 2.5 hours, but mm-hmm. it can be a long time.
For mm-hmm.
So I'm breaking out all of the little tiles and set pieces and miniatures and nice. Bringing every visual possible thing I can.
Nice.
Simplifying the character sheets right down to just the stuff they need.
Yeah.
It'll still be D&D, but just to keep it a little bit more streamlined and straightforward. But no, I'm looking forward to it. So.
Looking forward to hearing the report back next week.
Yeah, well, it will be, this isn't until mid-November, right. So late November. But yeah, I'll definitely talk about it a few more times as we get closer and closer to it.
Nice.
So. All right. So it looks like we've got some feedback from a stranger to the podcast, well, right?
I listen to all of our podcasts.
Narcissist.
Not really.
So he's committed.
Even the podcast feed, they drop, and I'm like, okay. So mm-hmm. I'm going to listen to all my other podcasts because we drop on Tuesday like a lot of other mm-hmm. game podcasts I listen to. And so I listen to ours last. And then I can say, oh, the levels were off or something
mm-hmm.
like that. So last week we had Spencer as a guest. And
it was a surprise guest star. Sorry. I dropped him in on us last minute.
So he used my microphone and I used the recorder base microphone. Well, if you know anything about sound recording, then I'll give you a really quick lesson. Dynamic microphones are what we normally use. These things pick up
too technical. Too technical, Chris.
This is a dynamic microphone. As I talk and turn over here, you can hear me a whole lot less. But when I talk back and now, you can hear me just fine. That's dynamic.
Right.
I was using a compressor mic that was on the recorder. These things pick up everything in the room.
Which is why you could hear my dog howling upstairs.
Dog upstairs. I sounded a little bit echoey as I'm echoing off the back wall. I have since bought a fourth microphone, so...
Which is why there's only 3 of us today.
Yeah. When we have a surprise fourth guest, that won't happen.
You'll be ready.
It's a learning experience. We're on episode 9. That's a pretty epic thing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the last of the single digit episodes.
I know. So, did you...
big deals.
Get any new games this week?
I got a couple new games this week. Actually, I don't think I got any brand new games. I was trying to think, did I pull anything in the house today? Or no, I did not. But I did order Mechs vs. Minions. This is a game, if you've played video games in the last, I don't know, 10 years, you've heard of a game called League of Legends.
Right.
It's all of the rage. It's, you know, people pay to watch this. It's on ESPN3 or something. I don't know.
Wow.
But anyway, that company, really, the people that work for it really like board games.
Right.
And they created a cooperative board game based off of the League of Legends characters. And it's called Mechs vs. Minions. It's a crazy, crazy inexpensive game. It's $75.
Mm-hmm.
But if any other game company tried to make this, it would run about $250. Like, right. All the miniatures and all the stuff.
Wow.
But this company has, like, they're a $1 billion company by themselves.
Wow.
That company by itself has more money than the entire board game industry combined.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow.
So they're like, we just like board games. We want to make a cool board game.
Right.
So if you haven't ordered Mech vs. Minions or you haven't heard about it, spend $75. It's a cooperative game. Part of what our topic is today,
mm-hmm.
cooperative games. Looks really fun. Definitely think you should check it out.
Everyone loves Mechs.
Yeah, and it's Mechs and
right.
Minions. And
right.
It's really kind of, it's the League of Legends characters riding on different robotic mechs and doing like special things as they're doing that. It's also it's a programming game, which
programmatic, right?
Sort of. It feels a lot like Robo Rally. So Robo Rally is a game where you play your cards out, like you make a plan, you put four cards out that you're going to say, these are the cards I'm going to run in my turn. Mm-hmm. Everyone does that simultaneously, and then you play out those cards, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, so that's what you mean by programmatic. There's an order to your moves that you've decided ahead of time, and then boom, that's how it goes.
Play out. So it's very much like that, with a twist though. So it's a very interesting thing, because your program will change from turn to turn, and you can add to it and switch up and things like that.
Okay.
It's not like a completely new program every time.
Right.
So, really looking forward to it. A couple other games I've kickstarted. One is Illimat. Illimat is a game by Keith Baker? Yes, Keith Baker. Creator of Eberron, a D&D setting. He and Andy Looney do a podcast called The Download. I listen to them all the time.
Right.
And he's doing this game with the Decemberists, basically a band.
I love the Decemberists.
Well, the Decemberists, when they're on tour, they play board games.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. They did a photo shoot at one point, and in the photo shoot, they decided it'd be fun to like come up with like a fake board game in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
So they came up with a board. Later, they're like, well, we need to find somebody that can like make this an actual game.
Wow.
So they called up Keith Baker and said, hey, can you make us this game? Because we love this game called Gloom, another game that he does.
Mm-hmm.
And we would love for you to make this game. So they spent the last couple years kind of refining it, and now it's on Kickstarter. The whole thing is, it's like the feel of a classic game that feels like it's existed forever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then people just forgot about it, but now it's back.
I like that.
Yeah,
that sounds nice.
So it feels very much like you're you know, kind of like old style card games or something like that.
Nice.
Sounds like something we could get Spencer into.
Yeah. So it's neat. I've seen a few videos on how it's played. Really looking forward to it. Also, I think once the Kickstarter finishes, it should get done really quick.
And that was called Lilimat, that one.
Illimat.
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 Gotcha.
Yeah. And then the other one, this one I just kickstarted because I like card games and adventures. So Adventura, the adventure card game, just seemed like it was speaking to me.
Right up your alley.
Yeah. So I think this one is a co-op adventure fantasy card game. So we'll see. I'll get more information on that as we go. So yeah, into the game of today.
Oh yeah, Pandemic.
Pandemic, which we're going to save. Because just coincidentally, we don't normally do this, we don't try to do it, where the game of the day is the soft topic of the
mm-hmm.
day. But in this case it was, so if we start talking about...
I know, it doesn't make sense.
We're going to be going on topic, not on purpose.
Yeah.
So do we want to talk... Josh wasn't there, but we could talk a little bit about...
Cosmic Encounters.
Oh, you did it! Oh, we did. Yeah. Explain.
Chris,
how did it
tricked
go?
Me into playing Cosmic Encounters.
That doesn't sound like you had a good time.
I hate games where negotiating is a core element of the game. I
because it's constantly making alliances. I seem to remember from our last week when we were talking about it.
So you have five worlds in front of you, and on your turn, you draw a card that tells you which system of planets you can attack of the other players.
Right.
So like if I draw blue, Chris is playing with the blue planets. I can attack Chris.
Right.
And then Chris and I can both try to convince the other players to join our side in the battle.
Right.
So you have to convince them of your logic, which is I like that part.
Right.
But then you could also like try to bribe, negotiate, like that kind of stuff, which I just don't really
enjoy.
It's all
wheeler dealering, almost like salesman. Yeah. Like, I'm going to try and convince you.
Yes, it does feel a little bit like being a used car salesman. No offense, Matt.
And he's like, I hate these kind of games. And Sydney leans over to me and he's like, I love this game so much, I'll play it whenever you want.
Yeah, me and Sydney are like opposite spectrum gamers.
Right, yeah.
So, but yeah, it was still fun. It was worth playing the one time. I don't know that I would join a second game.
Right.
It's a good game to have played.
Right.
If you like the game, there's so much variety to it. You know, we talk about symmetric versus asymmetric games, where symmetric is everybody starts from the same, you have the same powers and abilities,
mm-hmm.
right.
whatever. This is, for the most part, a completely asymmetric game.
Mm-hmm.
There are, I'm just going to make up the number off the top of my head, because I can say 3 inches.
We're both holding out our hands, yeah.
Each card represents a different race that you can start with.
Yeah.
Right.
So, stacks and stacks of them.
From looking at the distance between your finger and your thumb, it looks about 6 inches worth of cards. A big stack.
There's about Well, if you look at a typical game box, the cards go from the bottom to the top once you have all the expansions. Wow. Of course, I have all the expansions.
Of course.
But there's probably around 200 to 300 different possible starting races you can play with.
Right. So, it's good replay value.
Yeah, I've made the rule that once you've played it, once you've played a race once, where I'm removing that card, so you can't ever use that one again.
Until we've gone through them all, sure. Which will never happen.
That's a fun rule.
Especially because I'm not going to play it again. I did like my race, though. I was the loser, and it was fun because I got to flip how it worked. So normally, the high score wins. Right. But when you use the loser card, the loser becomes the winner.
Yeah.
Nice.
If you choose it, so.
Yeah.
You choose. So, and I was playing the warrior, and the warrior gets stronger the more you fight, and even stronger if you lose.
Right.
You learn from your experience. Wow. So me fighting Kitty was pointless because at one point I was like plus 15 on all my attacks and she's like, all right, loser wins. And I'm like, okay, so I'm not going to attack Kitty.
I did like that ties were a possibility. So me and Sydney just tied one together. We worked together on the last turn to win.
Yep. Oh,
so that was kind of fun.
Yeah, so there is no tiebreakers.
Okay.
So the goal is to get 5 colonies on other people's planets. But there is no tiebreaker. So you can go in with someone else and say, okay, the two of us can beat them. We'll both get our 5th colony at the same time, and then we'll both win the game together.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So
I learned the value a couple of weeks ago of knowing the tie condition going into the game.
Yes.
Josh.
Nice.
All right. Ready to get on topic?
Let's do it.
All right. Here we go.
In this episode, we're talking about co-op games. There's a lot to talk about, so let's just jump right in.
Yeah, so let's start with the game we just played.
Pandemic, the classic.
I loved it.
It was really good. I mean, you guys
can't believe we hadn't played it before.
Yeah, like Chris, you'd been bad-mouthing it for a long time.
Right. For the record, I have been bad-mouthing it for a long time.
Yeah.
But that's because I've never played it.
Right. So explain how you're bad-mouthing something you've never played before.
That's not entirely true. So the only way I've played Pandemic was on the iPad.
Right.
And on the iPad, it is basically a single-player game.
Right.
You control all 4 of the characters, and you're trying to solve this puzzle.
Right.
And that wasn't overly interesting to me.
Right.
But, all right, we're talking about co-op games. We should definitely at least play Pandemic.
It is the
co-op game. And Dice Tower just did another podcast, fantastic podcast. Everyone should listen to Dice Tower. They just did an episode last week on the spoiler of Pandemic Legacy. So the last 30 minutes of their episode, after the credits, they put up a spoiler curtain and said, we're going to talk about everything that happened in our 2 individual games.
I hope you're not going to spoil it as well.
I'm not.
Right.
Don't tell us.
Yeah, I don't want to know.
I paused it. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to listen to anything about the Pandemic Legacy because I've only ever heard good things.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's like, let's try to play Pandemic once because, Legacy games vary things a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Was one of the reasons you used to badmouth it because you'd heard a lot of bad things?
So, yes. In a way, one of the things that can happen in Pandemic is one person could be like, you do this, you do this, you do this.
Alpha player, right?
So it does suffer.
Or AP.
It does suffer quite a bit.
It definitely can.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when we were playing, though, and all you guys get to that, but I want to defend myself first on the whole bad mouthing. So when you just look at the game, I mean, essentially, let's describe the game first. Josh,
right.
You haven't described the game.
Right. Well, right.
How do you play Pandemic?
So you've got a world map in front of you. Lots of squares on the map. Different areas have different colors. And the whole point of the game is that diseases are outbreaking as you take turns and you're trying to put out these diseases, try and cure them, stop them, before they, kind of mutate and, hurt you and then kill you. And you get given cards, you can, try and cure the diseases once you have a certain amount of cards. But essentially, you've got to work together to kind of formulate a plan. Because you're all 3 players are working against the board, which is coming out with all these new diseases. They're spreading, they're multiplying. So you've really got to kind of have these conversations each turn about, what should be our plan of attack? And everyone's got their own cards. So everyone's got their point of view on how exactly they, we might jointly beat the game.
Just played this with Josh. I think after Josh's explanation, I forgot how to play.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's been a while.
It wasn't. But yeah, the map with the four different diseases, the point of the game is to find a cure for all the diseases by playing four or five cards, depending on your roll,
right.
Of the same color that will cure the disease, and then you can eradicate it by cleaning it up, basically, as you go.
Right.
I actually just came up with a really good idea for a new game with Josh describing that. It sounded like a firefighting game.
Really? It felt like we were putting out fires. The diseases are the fires, and you go and stop them.
Let me try to, all of those things are true.
Right.
The four diseases represented by four different colors.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You have 24 cubes for each color.
Right.
And anytime you try to, so from the very beginning of the game, there's a number of cubes in all these different cities based on their color. And if you ever have to, you draw cards that tell you where to put new cubes at the end of every person's turn.
Mm.
If you can't put in a cube, you've automatically lost the game.
So if you've used up your cubes.
If you've used up your cubes for a particular color, you lose the game.
Yep.
Outbreaks happen. If ever a city has three cubes and you draw that city name again, an outbreak happens. So you don't put another cube in that city, but you put a cube in all of the connecting cities.
Mm-hmm. And that's a countdown.
Yep. After 8 outbreaks,
Lose the game, which is how we lost the game.
Yep. Yeah.
We're losers today.
Yeah.
And then the last way you can lose the game is you have player cards, and those player cards are basically all the city names on the board, and they're different colors. And if you have five of the same color and you're at a research station, then you can cure that disease, which makes it much easier to get it off the board.
Mm.
If you're the scientist, right? The scientist only needed four cards of the same color to cure the disease.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've cured all four diseases, you win the game. We lost.
We did. But we lost in kind of the best way, where I feel like I learned the game, I know the rules, and I want to play again right now.
Yeah, really do.
Like, we had to, pry the board out of my hands to get recording for this.
Absolutely. I was in the same position.
Yeah, that was the thing. It's like, all right, do we play again or do we record first? So we
and then break first. Out the legacy version. I'm so excited.
Yeah, so spoiler.
We can't spoiler.
We will let you know.
Yeah.
Tonight, after we're done recording, we're going to play the first month of Pandemic Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So we played the base game. We understand the rules. Now we're going to do Pandemic Legacy. For Pandemic Legacy, this is an ongoing storyline. The way this works is you have 12 months, January through December.
Mm-hmm.
When you play in a month, if you win, you go to the next month.
Right.
If you lose, you can try that month one more time. Any win or lose on that second playthrough, you still go to the next month. So you will play between 12 and 24 games of...
For a second, I thought you were going to say, if you lose the second time, that's it. The game is over. You bought the whole game to play two times.
In fact, the more you lose, the more things it gives you. So if you lose in your next game, you have research abilities that you can use for the next game. You can kind of choose which cards you want.
Oh, you should see the look on Kitty's face. She is like a kid in a candy store.
In my chair. I'm so excited for this.
She's doing the Hillary Clinton wiggle.
I'm just going to binge play this. But I don't, well, like I said, you have to work tomorrow. But whatever.
Work. Whatever.
Who needs that?
So yeah, so the Legacy version, I'm really looking forward to it because from everything I've heard about this, Pandemic Legacy, the storyline that goes with it, you get invested in the characters, surprises and things pop up. Pandemic has five different character roles, and I'll see if I can know these off the top of my head. We have the medic, we have the scientist, we have the researcher, we have the dispatcher, and we have the, who Kitty was playing?
Engineer?
The engineer. Yes.
Maybe?
Sure.
It was a two-word
and they all
name.
Do fun, special abilities. Yeah.
A very significant power.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a game-changing power.
Mm.
And
they're
required. Like, you have to, part of the game is trying to figure out how to use these powers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always fun. Any game that has those special roles, you know, you feel like, I have my part to play. This is my time to shine now.
Mm-hmm. I think something that we did that kind of was different, because I think I've never played Pandemic, but I think it was being played at the table behind us while we were playing Terra Mystica one time.
That's very possible.
So I was just kind of watching over my shoulder what was happening, which is why I lost at Terra Mystica, because that is not a game you can take your eyes off the board.
Right.
Pay attention, Kitty.
I'm really bad at that. But they were playing with open hands, and we kept our hands closed, yes. Which I think stops one person from being able to look at all the cards and just control the game.
Yeah.
Right, which is the whole alpha player syndrome, mm-hmm. which I feel like we should talk about a bit at yeah. length, maybe, because yeah. this isn't just unique to Pandemic. You know, there's probably a bunch of... I mean, it's more this genre, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel it's a co-op game problem.
So, I mean, that is true. And just for Pandemic, they have three levels of games. You have the easy version,
mm-hmm.
which they say is totally fine if you play open-handed.
Right.
The easy version has less epidemic cards in it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The normal version has 5 epidemic cards, and the hard version has 6, or they call it heroic, has 6 epidemic cards in it.
Right.
The epidemics are when you're drawing what are typically good cards,
uh-huh.
occasionally you can put these bad epidemic cards that cause bad things to happen.
Right.
Board just explodes in disease.
Basically, you're grabbing a random city
it's pretty
and
ugly.
Putting 3 cubes on it, and you're praying that it doesn't cause a
and then reshuffling in all of the cards that just got played. Yeah. So,
yeah,
it's tough.
Yeah. That's so fun. In the rules, it specifically says in the intro game, it is fine to play open-handed.
Right.
In the normal and heroic versions, though, you are not allowed to play open-handed, but you can tell everybody what you have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you just can't show your cards. You can't lay your cards down.
Sure.
The only reason for that, and that I can see, is to hide information from the other players for the majority of the time.
Yep.
And that stops that whole alpha player mechanic.
Right.
Also, it just, I think, makes it harder to, like, we were telling each other what cities we had, what special effects we had, what we could do, but you don't have that visual on the table of, like, oh, I can look at all the yellow cards right now and try to, like, figure this out while Chris and Josh do their own thing and then tell them what to do as soon as it's my turn. Like,
and that's the problem with the alpha player thing is, like we mentioned before, one person, if they have a strong dominant personality, strong views on how we should play this game, will probably say, oh, no, you should play your turn like this because that's the logical best way to play that turn. I mean, have you... You guys have played more co-op games than me. Have you come across that a lot? How is that? Because you're stuttering now because you've been accused of this many a time, Chris.
Careful, because I'm not necessarily... Personally, I'm not that strong of an alpha player. Like, I have an opinion. I think we should do this or that or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't actually think having the opinion is the bad part.
Right.
If you're that alpha player,
having
the opinion is actually not a bad thing. It encourages conversation. It encourages things going on.
Yeah.
It's when the conversation stops... That's a problem. Mm-hmm. So now I'm the only one talking. Everyone else is just smiling and nodding and doing whatever I ask them to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But even worse is when you get upset as a player
when someone doesn't do what you tell them to. Yeah.
Now I have had one situation with you, and I know there were circumstances that made you do this, but you essentially did do that, and it wasn't even a co-op game. We were against each other. There was 3 people around the table. I won't name names or name the game, but it was a very long game. It was about 6 hours. And you know what I'm talking about now, right?
It was name games.
This
was Star Trek Ascendancy.
Yep.
It is a huge 4X game.
Yes.
It took us almost 8 hours to finish this game.
Yep.
Start to finish. At 6 hours in, it was very obvious who was going to win the game. Josh and I had no chance.
Well, I feel like you kind of had a chance. I don't know. I'm remembering it differently. Or it was like...
Mathematically speaking, I was playing the Federation and I had nothing.
Oh, you got yourself in a corner, didn't you?
There was absolutely nothing I could do in the last 2 hours.
Yeah.
There was absolutely nothing I could do. And for that, I was not trying to alpha player that.
No, I know.
Like, she felt I was trying to, but I really wasn't.
No, I know.
I was just trying to
Who are you playing
that,
with?
And this is a friend of ours that we played with at Gen Con.
Oh, okay.
I don't think you know her, but we are going to have her over and we are going to play this game again with her. And I think she actually listens to this podcast.
She's a character. We should have her on as a guest speaker one day.
I love her dearly.
Yeah.
But all I was trying to do in that game was point out, you have this game locked in.
Yeah.
All you have to do is A, B, C, and it's done.
Yes.
And we can't stop you from doing it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So,
well, the tension there was that we had a fourth person that wasn't playing, but was spectating the game. And we had obviously didn't realize it was going to take so long. And so we felt bad, and Chris particularly felt bad. If this takes longer and longer, we are subjecting this other person to just sitting here and watching it. But then there's the opposite side, which is, you know, the fourth person mentioned to you afterwards, which was, look, you sat through a 6-hour game. You've all had your own, you know, autonomous ways of doing your moves. You are almost snatching away that person's victory of like, no, I think you should win this way. And she just wanted to kind of win in her own way. So I was a tough one. I get both reasons. You know, I get both sides of it.
It's true. So that's kind of a different thing. We have an entire topic on the, wait a minute, I've already played this entire game out in my head, and this person is definitely going to win.
Yeah.
Nothing anyone else could do. Just let's get it over with.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Call it a game and start the next one. But back to the alpha player and co-op game.
Right.
Thanks for throwing me under the bus, Josh.
Well, that was interesting.
If the alpha player takes offense at something not happening,
yeah,
that's when it becomes a problem. Mm-hmm. So there was one instance in this game where I wanted to do something.
Right.
And you guys are like, oh, no, Josh wanted to do something.
Yeah.
So Josh was going to go over and save Los Angeles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I don't know. Maybe you should.
Maybe it's not worth saving.
Yeah, it's terrible. So I'm like, oh, I'm off anyway. And you guys are like, no, I think Los Angeles is really a good chance it's going to come up. I'm like, all right. Alright, I totally agree. If you guys don't save Los Angeles and Los Angeles Park comes up, I'm gonna be the bad guy.
Yeah,
right.
And I don't really have like a super better move.
Yeah.
So I'm like, alright, save Los Angeles. And it didn't come up. Something else came up and we lost for completely unrelated reasons.
Right.
I mean, it was basically we had two yellow cities that were about to overflow, and if one of them, we couldn't get to one of them at all. There was just no way any of us on the board could get there. But Josh could get to Los Angeles, and it just so happened that the other one was
LA
outbreak.
LA Savior.
But it was a conversation.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The thing is, like,
but we're strong players.
Right.
And we had an opinion, and we fought back with you. If we were not as strong players, and we were just kind of learning the game, I mean, we were all learning it together, really, but if we were not as quick at picking up games as we are, you could have just totally bowled us over.
Although, hopefully I wasn't doing that. Because I don't really like being the alpha player.
Yeah.
Normally I like to sit back and have the conversation.
And when you do it, you do it by, you don't realize you're doing it. Right. You're just, you know, you're into the game and you're looking at good moves and you're like, wow, this is a great move.
We just like to make fun of you.
Yes. Again, I thought it was a really good conversation with the three of us. And I think I enjoyed it so
exactly.
much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because every move, regardless of whose turn it was, we were talking about the options, but the person whose turn it was made the final decision.
Yeah.
And none of us got upset about it. There was another move where, you know, I could have gone over to help out yellow, and I'm like, well, I don't know, I'm going to grab all these blues, and then I can be in a position to help next turn.
Yeah.
And if only we hadn't stopped you from getting all of the blues, maybe we wouldn't be. We'd still be playing.
Blue
killed us.
We couldn't have taken all the blues anyway, as I was going to be one short.
I know.
And it just so happened that that one.
Canada.
That one.
Blue. Oh.
But no, I mean, so the alpha player is a problem in co-op games, but I don't think it's the biggest problem in co-op games.
Okay.
So one of the things, and it's really, like, I had some harsh opinions of co-op games, and then we played this one, and I'm like, oh, wait, I just really want to play it again right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's other things to think about with a co-op game. Number one, why do people like them?
Because you don't have the stress of a competitive game? Some people find that stressful.
Yeah.
No. I really liked it because it's more of a puzzle you're working on together than, like, it feels more like a, like, adventure than like a game that you're playing against each other. It feels less.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm just getting that. It's cooperative. We worked together.
Well, it did
to
foster a lot of conversation.
I know, it did. I really liked it.
Well, at the same time, like, and we're going to refer a lot back to this specific game. But yeah. This applies to pretty
I was going to say, we though. Should maybe, like, name some others. I don't even think we've mentioned.
Right. A single.
Legendary Encounters, we've talked about both of those. We have talked about XCOM. Mm-hmm. We haven't played it yet, but.
I'm dying to play that one.
We'll play that one. That'll be a really fun one to play. Mysterium, I've mentioned in the past. I don't think you guys have played it.
I've heard good things about that.
Imagine Deception over Hong Kong, where there's not actually a murderer, the two cars are decided at random, but the forensic investigator is still trying to get you.
Makes sense. Yeah.
So you're playing together as a complete team.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Just within Traitor. The Dungeons and Dragons adventure system is a kind of a cooperative, dungeon crawl game.
Right.
Where you're playing against the board, there are scenarios that get set up and you're trying to beat them.
Well, hang on, how is that different to normal D&D? I thought you were all banding together, right?
The only real difference is instead of having a dungeon master that is coming up with the story and building things as you go, you're playing against a preset deck.
I get you now.
From, and you're getting encounters from those.
Sure.
From that deck.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually does give you a pretty good, like, Dungeons and Dragons feel to that.
That's cool.
Nice.
So that was my mentioning a whole bunch of other games.
Nice. So, yeah, I mean, you guys have played a lot more co-ops than me. I mean, what was your feeling before today's great game that we all loved? Like, I felt like we were kind of lukewarm on the idea of co-ops.
So most of the co-op games that I have played previously are deck builder co-ops.
Yes.
Which I think can fall prey more to the alpha player in some ways because they can just tell you what card to buy.
Right.
What you pull is random. But so what you buy is really the decision to make, and one experienced player can really just say, like, oh, well, this is the best one there right now. You should do this because this.
Right.
And that can really be controlled a lot more.
Right.
And I don't think that I like the deck-building mechanic as much as I enjoyed the more traditional move-around-the-board mechanic of Pandemic.
Yeah.
Well, and the deck-building mechanic suffers a lot more from luck.
Mm. Yes.
So I can say, oh, you should buy this card because that makes most sense, and I should buy this card. Because even with the Legendary Encounters, Firefly, is a cooperative game that Josh and I played.
Yeah.
Harry Potter, Kitty and I played, and Josh and I played, never at the same time.
Yeah.
But those two games can both suffer from luck. You can buy exactly the right card and still get
just screwed. Just don't pull it at the right time. Yep.
Right.
So I think that is kind of, it can give you a negative connotation of it.
Yeah.
Now, one I didn't mention, Warhammer Fantasy West, or Warhammer Adventure Quest. It's a game by Fantasy Flight. It's a cooperative adventure deck-building game. It's discontinued because of Fantasy Flight lost the Warhammer license.
Right.
The Warhammer guys, Games Workshop, is doing their own thing. Yada, yada, yada. But not overly important. But it's an interesting game in that you're going through and working together as a team of adventurers to try to overcome the deck.
Right.
The Pathfinder Adventure card game is the same exact thing. You are taking on the role of a D&D character. Pathfinder is based off of D&D, so just use that, Dungeons and Dragons. You're taking a fantasy character, and your character is defined by the cards you have in your hand. And as you play, you're going to buy cards, and you're going to go up against monsters and things like that. Very, very fun. That game is also, they don't brand itself as a legacy game. Most people wouldn't call it one.
Right.
But it's a campaign game where what you do in game one gets carried over to game two.
It's a carryover, yeah.
So those kind of games, they can feel luck. But those ones, I really love the Pathfinder Adventure card game.
Mm-hmm.
Short of the setup and cleanup of it. It's horrible. But the iPad version of it is amazing.
Yeah.
Does everything for you.
That's nice.
So
another point I wanted to make was that, you know, it seems like a lot of co-op games are billed as, you know, maybe gateway games to casual gamers. I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think that's true?
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Explain
I'm
yourself.
Not sure though that that's fair.
Really?
Well, look at this. We're a group of very experienced gamers. I think we were kind of turned off by the beginner label of Pandemic. I think that's part of the reason I hadn't played it before is because when I was at a party where we were going to sit down and play a game, I'm looking around the shelf. I'm like, well, that's like a like beginner everyone game. Everyone plays Pandemic, that one. I'm going to play the more obscure. I'm going to play, I might not have a chance to play this other game again. I could always play Pandemic and just never got around to it.
Right.
Pandemic's kind of fallen into the Settlers of Catan for gamers, for real gamers.
Right.
And I put real in air quotes.
Yeah.
Those people are constantly looking for the next great game.
Hardcore.
Hardcore gamers. Right. Because, you know, Catan is a great game.
Yeah.
It's great to introduce people like, oh, I've only played Monopoly. Oh, well, try this other game.
Yeah.
It will kind of steer you in a different way of thinking about things.
We got Spencer's mom to play Catan one time.
You can get just about anyone.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And they are going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Pandemic's kind of the same thing in the co-op genre. And when you have, like, people who are, like, always trying new board games, like, it's Pandemic. Everyone's done that. I don't need to do it. Now that I've done it, I'm like, oh, all right, I see what it is. I see it. And I will probably, once we play through Pandemic Legacy, I don't know that I'll have to go back to it again. I certainly do not see myself not enjoying that time.
Yeah. I'm way more excited about Pandemic Legacy now.
But that said, I do still think that cooperative games are a great way to bring non-gamers into the hobby.
Yes.
Definitely.
Because say that we, the three of us are playing, say that we had a fourth person that hadn't played before, Spencer's mom.
Sure.
She wouldn't have to be overly stressed about knowing the rules, worrying about losing because we can help her.
The point is to help her. Yeah. It's like, even when you're playing a game against other people, like, you'll help someone who's new to the game, but it's not going to be the same because you're still trying to win. Yep. At least that's how I teach people games. I was like,
I help you a little bit, but not enough that you can beat me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think you can get more casual players.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think Pandemic is a different kind of scenario, a different kind of setting than a lot of other games. A lot of the games that I play, at least, or have come across, are more fantasy, like, have to get into like a world or space where you are going to explore and expand. There's a lot going on in those games. A lot of time you feel like you have to learn a different language.
Yeah, that's true.
Pandemic, it's a map of the world. Yeah. The world. Well, the world. The whole world.
Including the US.
Yeah.
We're in there too.
Yeah. Now they do have, just recently, came out of Gen Con this year, so let's see, it's actually 2 or 3 months ago, Cthulhu Pandemic.
Oh, boy.
So they do tweak the rules a little bit from what I've heard. Now I actually think I'm going to pick it up, so don't be too surprised if in the next episode
it's on the list. It's on the Chris has a shopping problem list.
Yeah. So let's take a look briefly at the pitfalls of co-op games.
So we talked about AP already, Alpha Play already. What else is there? I mean, maybe it's too luck-driven to some extent.
I think there is, there has to be a high level of luck inside of any co-op game.
Right.
And the reason for that is, if there were a, if it was just a puzzle to be solved, once you solve it, you'd never have to go back.
You don't have to play it again.
Yeah.
So you have to have an element of luck that essentially says, you are, you may lose just because the card said so.
Which I want to say is the exact reason we lost today.
It is.
Well, I mean, we're amazing.
Yeah.
It's surely it's only,
we did everything right.
Exactly.
No, we didn't. I want to replay it. Restart.
When you look at the game of Solitaire, typical 52-card deck of...
Everyone loves that game.
Well, not everyone.
No, I'm kidding.
I do.
If you're,
that might be why I love Pandemic.
Yeah. Oh, right.
But there are, like, if you go out and you see, like, the most casual of gamers, I still, on the train, like, we live in Chicago, so I'm on the train a lot. And I, whenever someone's playing a game on their phone, I'm always kind of, like, eyeing, seeing what they're playing. I'm curious. And if they're texting someone, I'm curious what they're texting people, too. But that's beside the point. Anyway.
Nosy.
The point is, Solitaire is a very, very common thing to see on someone's phone.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if computers, because that was for a long time, that was the game that was on everyone's computer.
Yeah.
Especially at work.
Right.
Yeah.
For some reason, it didn't get taken off the work computers. Yeah. It was always there.
It was installed with Windows.
Yeah.
Which I heard, the reason they had those games like Minesweeper and Solitaire was to learn the actions, because all these things that Microsoft pioneered, you know, clicking and dragging and things. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but Solitaire is a lot of fun, and people have a lot of fun with it.
But sometimes the two is under the ace, and there is nothing, you can't win.
Right.
There's nothing, or the ace is under the two, whatever way it is.
In fact, Solitaire is a game where I think, because actually one of the first jobs I had out of college was I wrote video games. And one of the things I wrote was a game called Super Score Solitaire. So it was basically a lot of glitz and glamour, but it was still solitaire. And you could really only win that game about 25% of the time. And then, like, no matter what you did, that's the best you could do.
Wow.
Now, you can have variations of it where instead of drawing three cards and flipping, you just draw one and flipping, which will increase dramatically how often you win. But there's still about a 25 to 30% chance that the stacks are just literally stacked against you.
Right.
I think it was maybe on an iPod, like a old iPod. They had, you could play a Vegas-style solitaire where you had, it was a one-draw deck, but you only had three times to go through it, and you got to, like, bet money on your hands. That I was super addicted to that in college. That was really fun. I also play a lot of Spider Solitaire, which is an intense game if you're playing with four suits.
But all of these games, like, to bring it back to co-op games, a co-op game is really just a team solitaire.
It is.
You know, it's us against the board.
Yeah.
It's us all playing. Because I used to sit next to my friends and we'd play solitaire. It's like, oh, wait, you can play this card over here.
Which is essentially what we're doing with these co-op games. You know, it's that conversation we're having about how shall we play this? You know, what are the good moves available to us?
Exactly.
Definitely. And I will have to introduce you guys. I'll have to drag you out to my parents' house in the suburbs. And we'll have to play a game called Racing Demons.
Ooh.
Which me and my mom found in a like one of those stack book of card games one day, and we started playing. And it's basically you have your solitaire game in front of you, and it's not exactly solitaire, but it's sort of like solitaire. You've got a stack of 13 cards you're trying to get rid of, and everyone's aces go in the middle of the table, so you can play off anybody's aces.
That's cool.
And then whoever gets rid of their stack first shouts some sort of word, and you count up how many cards are still in your stack or negative points, how many you have up on the table are positive points, and that's your score. And we played like 500 or something crazy. But my mom always really liked it because when we were kids, you're supposed to have 13 cards in your stack. But if you're 10 years old, she'd put 8 cards in your stack. And then it's competitive still for you.
You can give handicaps to the people that aren't as good, right?
And then she'd put like 15 cards in her pile because she's insane. Right. But that's a fun one.
Co-op game and make it competitive.
Right.
You know, and that's not like unheard of. Well, Deception, Murder in Hong Kong is kind of a competitive version of a cooperative game.
Right.
You know, so once you have the cooperative version where you can be like, okay, we're working together, all right, well, how now do we make it competitive to kind of pull that out? And, you know, and you'll have cooperative games. Legendary. So we talk about Legendary Encounters. Legendary is a cooperative, competitive game. You have to cooperate to beat the goal, but at the end, who has the most points wins.
That's kind of fun.
So it is a completely, it's another type of game, and you don't see it as often as pure competitive versus pure cooperatives, but there's a lot out there of we're cooperating to complete a goal. Whoever does it best is the MVP of the game.
Right. I wonder if that can kind of almost undercut the whole co-op thing, you know, with some games. Because then it's like, is this even a co-op now? Because I just want to win this game. I don't care if we beat the board.
One of my favorite lines, we were playing Legendary, Marvel Legendary.
Right.
And there were four of us, and the group was essentially playing it as a cooperative game. We had to beat whatever the villains were. And we're like, oh, well, we can do this and this. And one of the players said, okay, well, you guys are playing nice, but this is a competitive game, so I'm going to do this. And from that point on, it's like, all right, I guess it's cut.
All right.
Each man for themselves. Nice. So I take it we've kind of segued into different versions of co-op games. You've got these kind of competitive ones. I mean, what other versions are there, sort of subgenres?
I have a great one, which is not really a tabletop game necessarily. It is a phone game, but you play it all in the same room. Space Team.
Yes.
Ooh, I've not heard of this. You have to explain
you
to me.
You haven't played? We haven't made you do this?
No.
Oh, man. So it's a fun one.
Kitty and I are going to play Space Teams real quick.
Okay.
To Turn the puzzle. What's the three?
DNA family. Toggle the DNA family. Flip it. Wow. Wormhole.
Oh my god. I have no idea what just happened then.
So you download the app on your phone.
Yeah.
And it is. All kinds of crazy things happen. You have a little, like, space dashboard.
Yeah, you've got, like, a little dashboard, and then you've got, like, instructions. But the instructions aren't for things on your control.
Are there instructions
for
other people?
Everyone in the room.
Yeah.
Oh. You all connect your phones and the app together.
And so you're shouting out the instructions.
Yes.
So that hopefully someone else has the fuddly ones that they can turn to level two.
Right. Yeah. Right. So some of them are crazy words. Some of them sound like real spaceship words, and some of them are pictures.
Yeah.
Nice.
So the DNA family was actually one that I had one time where I was shouting across the room at Rob, and Rob's like, "That was a great description of that picture."
I was like, yeah. Nice.
I felt good about that
one. Maybe lines to the alien phase.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's the kind of thing you say.
Sounds cool.
It's really, it's like a kind of hit the mark, like levels up, and you can only, like, you know, the winning is just getting to the next level, and eventually it's going to go so fast you're going to lose.
Yeah. Right.
But it is a perfect example of a co-op game done perfectly on mobile. Now, there are some other variations of co-ops, and we will do entire shows on these variations, but I want to kind of throw them out there.
Sure.
As they're not pure co-ops, but they have the same elements. Team games. One team versus another. So you're cooperating with your team, but instead of competing against the board, you're competing against the other team.
Gotcha.
This gives you kind of this feeling of you still win or lose, you're doing it together.
Any notable examples?
Is that Captain Sonar?
Captain Sonar.
Right.
Is a great
example of the newer team game.
Nice.
Which you guys have not played yet, right?
No, I want to play that, though. Sounds like fun.
And it has a lot of the shouting.
Right.
Yeah.
So the shouting. So instead of spaceships, you're on a submarine.
Yeah.
And you have up to four players per team. Uh-huh. It is an amazing game.
Cool.
Hidden Traitor games, where they start out where everyone thinks they're working together, but somebody isn't. Or maybe people might not be. And sometimes it's not.
You know,
sometimes,
yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes the Hidden Traitor may be there and may not be. So you have to do... You know, you have to kind of play as like, I don't know, are they with us, are they not with us?
Gotcha.
Some great examples of this. Dead of Winter.
Battlestar Galactica is a great one.
It's a great one because you might not even know that you're the traitor.
You're the traitor. Game.
Spencer already called dibs on doing a special guest on that episode because he loves Battlestar Galactica.
Cool.
So that's a great one. Also, Hidden Goal for co-op. Is another way to battle the alpha player. So we are all playing together.
Right.
But we all have individual goals.
Okay.
Our main goal, do this particular task, is the same for everyone.
Right.
But my goal is secret to me and doesn't always align with our task.
Oh.
So Dead of Winter is a good one because it has secret goal and hidden traitor.
And hidden traitor.
Yeah.
I had not a great experience with that because I was being taught by somebody who had the secret traitor role. So she was the only one playing who knew the rules of the game and was explaining to everyone kind of like it, because it's got a lot of things you can do on your turn. It's a very tough board to figure out.
Right.
Also, I was not as into games then as I am now. I might have an easier time now picking it up.
Sure.
But yeah. And then all of a sudden she's like, oh, and by the way, I just beat all of you.
Well, so withhold information so that she could do that? Or what gave her the advantage?
She was a very fair person.
Okay.
But when you'd ask her, like, what's the best one to get us towards our goal? I'm not sure that she always was actually
to win.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just happened to come up. The cards happened to come up.
Right.
So I think we're actually going to talk about Hidden Traitor games on our next podcast.
Nice.
We'll get more into detail.
We'll break out the fourth mic. Yeah,
exactly. One versus mini games is another classification of games.
Right.
So this, I like to call them pseudo role-playing games, where one person is taking on the role of the world, the environment, the bad guys, whatever it is.
Right.
And everyone else is working together to beat that person.
Right.
The others is a very recent version of this where one person is taking on, you know, the role of the sin and everyone else is taking on the heroes that are trying to save the city. Mansions of Madness is one that's been around for a really long time. Descent is a very common one where, you know, it's almost like playing a Dungeons and Dragons dungeon crawl.
Mm-hmm.
One person's taking on the role of the dungeon and the monsters.
Right.
Now, when these games happen, they're different from role-playing games because the one has very, very strict rules as to what they can do.
Right.
And the mini has, you know, they do whatever they do, but they're working together as a team.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So...
I can see the appeal to that, because I can imagine you know more about this feeling because you DM a lot. Is it that sort of feeling like I'm the special one?
It's not necessarily I'm the special one. I like to play the one,
right,
one versus minis, because I like fighting against lots of people.
Yeah.
Mostly because I think I'm the dungeon master so often, it just feels comfortable for me to be on that side of the
table. Also because you're not good at cooperating all the time.
And I hate cooperating with people.
Just listen to me and do what I say.
But I also enjoy not being that person. But mm-hmm. There's a new version of Dracula out. That one's a hidden movement, one versus mini, as well as, Spectros. Is another one versus mini where the one is moving around secretly on a map and everyone else is trying to figure out where that person is.
Do you also, I'm trying to see the appeal to it. Is it kind of like you're more powerful as well as that
you're
position?
Not more powerful.
Is it more like, or is it maybe the secret information that you have versus everyone?
You have the secret information usually. Yes. In some games, like the last two games I mentioned, there is secret information, especially for hidden movement.
Yeah.
But in something like the others, you all have cards in front of you that can pull out secret things that nobody else knows. So it's really just a matter of, like, being teamed up on.
Right.
And seeing if you can overcome that.
Yeah.
So, you do like to take kind of the underdog role a lot of times. Mm. That is, like, one of Chris's favorites.
Yeah, sure. It's a fun role to be like, all right, I'll take you all on. Bring it.
Right, right. It's the kind of almost lone wolf, character to play, like, I do things my own way. Yes. I don't
need
a team.
Some of those moments, we were talking a few weeks ago about role-playing games. Those are some of my favorite role-playing moments, is where, like, there's a moment in the game where I'm just like, oh, I got this. Yeah. Like, and those are fun moments.
Right, right, right.
And I think,
you pick up your 8 dice and just like, ah.
And I think I
saved
this for last, but role-playing games are the ultimate cooperative game.
That is true.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that the players versus the DM. So it's not a one versus many.
Right.
It is a full on, everyone at the table is playing together.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Now there's not necessarily a defined goal you're trying to do at the table,
depends on the campaign.
Sure. But if the DM is having fun and the players are having fun, you have won that game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You don't win role playing games otherwise. But it is a cooperative effort to get to the point where everyone's having a great time.
That's a really good way of putting it. I don't think all people feel like that. I feel like there's some DMs out there that are like, I am the game and I'm going to beat you down.
Yes, which is why I think there's a lot of people out there who say, I played this once and I never want to do it again. Yeah. Because they come into one of those DMs who say, no, I am the game, I am the rules. And they die in the first roll of the game, and the DM lets them just die.
Right.
They spend all that time creating a character. Every person I know who says, I played one time and I don't want to again, it's because a DM killed them within the first 10 minutes of their first game.
Right.
So, and I think it's one of those things where if you're a DM who feels that it's not a role-playing game is not a cooperative game, email me and I will tell you why you're wrong.
I like it. There you go, kids.
Oh, we might actually get an email now. I feel that was a challenge.
Bring it on.
This is definitely a challenge. But we're running really close to time, so I do want to end on a positive note.
Sure.
About, I don't think we had a lot of negative notes.
No.
But I think one of the things cooperative games can do that competitive board games don't do as well is create the story. We talked about in our role-playing episode how the story is the memories that you pull away from it.
Yeah.
In a cooperative game, because you're building this memory together, you come away with a group memory.
Yeah.
Like this game we just played, like, we all know, it's like, oh man, we got screwed by this, or that was the thing. It's like, oh, we've only done this.
Remember St. Petersburg? Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm going to remember Josh saving LA, though. Like, that's a thing.
Exactly. So I think cooperative games have this ability to create these memories.
Yeah, and not only that, foster interaction, maybe more so than harder. Right.
So,
good point.
Yeah, especially, I keep forgetting the name of that terrible game you made me play.
Cosmic Encounter.
Tavern. Yeah, that's the one. I think I'm blocking it from my memory.
Opposite of a cooperative game. Yeah.
It is, but we kept calling it a social game, but I agree. I think that I had more fun socially speaking playing Pandemic.
All right. Well, we're going to play Pandemic again in just a few moments.
I'm so excited.
Do you guys have anything you want to add before we go out?
I made Chris make me an admin of our Facebook page. So now our Facebook page is actually going to do things instead of just posting our episodes. Yeah. So you should all like us on Facebook now.
Social media guru over there.
Also nice one, Kitty. On a Twitter handle. So Tabletop Game Talk isn't taken on Twitter.
Ooh.
Because it's one letter too long.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
So, I do have Tabletop Game TLK. Don't go to it. We're not doing anything with it yet. But eventually we'll come up with the right Twitter handle for Tabletop Game Talk.
Right.
If you have a good idea for a Twitter handle, put it on our Facebook page.
Yeah. Now we'll see
the lack of engagement we have from our audience.
Well,
please.
We have surpassed 1,000 downloads.
Sweet.
Whoa.
I want these people to get in touch somehow, some way.
Now, that's over all of our episodes, but that's still a pretty big deal.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a milestone.
Yeah. I sure haven't just been downloading it over and over again.
Okay. I'm only counting unique downloads.
Nice.
But yes, please email us at tabletopgame.com. I know, I'm going to take away all Josh's things.
Yeah.
I have an entire script to read.
Right. So, you know I love doing it.
Josh.
Well, indeed, by smashing the mic, Chris. Anyway, thanks for listening. And remember, we always want your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. You can reach us directly on Twitter. I'm at Josh's Blonde. Chris is at Game Master Chris. And Kitty is at Kittenow. Of course, you can always leave a post on our Facebook page, Google Plus group, or our BoardGameGeek.com pages. And as always, we'd like to thank Tristan Dunman for our cover art. She can be reached on Twitter at Tristan Dunman. Until next week, when we go in depth on Hidden Traitor games, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.